and a big moment at the end, which reflects listening to the fans.
That's the paperwork.
That's cap. Totally cap. That means lie.
Welcome to the Best Things About Pro Wrestling This Month, the show we talk about some of the best things about pro wrestling this month, whether it's a match, segment, character development, or anything in between. This is the show where we talk about some of the best things about pro wrestling in any particular month. I'm Omar, the same host that's going to remind you to say, fuck Hulk Hogan, he's a racist piece of shit, just in time for Black History Month. Now, you know, I was actually recording this, telling you guys the intro, that I just realized it's been like 2 years. We've gained like 100,000 total viewership. I mean, now we're reaching 120, but 120,000 total viewership. TikTok is like 200,000. Instagram is around like 500. It was around like 200-ish. It's crazy. Like Instagram as well, because that was the only platform that was kind of struggling. But I was getting back-to-back, like, at least 1,000 viewership. So it's thanks to you guys. And it's because of it I've gained new people to listen to the show, you know? Like, it's just crazy, you know? Like, I mean, it's two people, but, yeah, one person is better than, you know, two is better than one, as they say, right? So, yeah, that was the thing that I was thinking about. And, you know, me retiring the blog, for those who don't know, I used to do a blog called Player Wrestling Post. I used to write, like, reviews. I used to do essays. I used to do, The 5 Newsweek, which, you know, that series may or may not be back someday. This is a series that I want to bring back, but not in a written format. So we'll see what happens. We'll see. It depends on how this show gets successful or not. But, yeah, we're on, like, almost 20 episodes at this point. It's crazy, and it's all thanks to you guys just supporting, listening to what I say, talking about the things we like about pro wrestling in any particular month. And it's crazy because the whole point for this show is to talk about the things that I like in pro wrestling, because a lot of times, a lot of these mofos, they be, you know, clout chasing and shit. They be like hating on shit for no fucking reason. I mean, some people, you know, they just like certain things as valid, and there's certain negative aspects about the business, which we'll be talking about in a little bit, that has to be addressed. But overall, it's about celebrating the art form. It's celebrating the things we like. Why do we like certain things? Why do we like certain things? And that's important to showcase, you know, the things that we like about pro wrestling in a particular month. And because we want to celebrate, like I said, that art form, things that we like. And, you know, it's not being a negative and a Nancy or whatever, just, you know, this show sucks, here's why. You know, like, insert this year, worst WWE year in years, and I'm just like, come on, dog. Like, I saw, like, a thumbnail of a YouTube video where someone's like, 2022 is the worst year of WWE in history. I'm like, come on, 2018 literally exists, or 2019 literally exists. Those 2 years, almost 20 years at this point, and those were terrible. OC Hot, remember that? Remember when they put, you know, what do you call it, dog food on Roman Reigns during the 2019 Smack? Oh my goodness, those shows were so bad. When I used to do the blog, that was like my early days of blog. That's when I had like one person like reading every single time, and that person could probably be me. Literally back then, like, it was so bad, I just didn't want to review. I was like, yeah, this show is terrible, I'm not going to review it, F it. But now, WWE has gotten better, at least from a creative standpoint, and that is a good thing. And I think that the podcast came at the right time. It came at the right time. That's all I'm going to say. But yeah, enough about the tangent out of the way. Let's talk about the things that we liked about pro wrestling, at least the honorable mention side of things. And because of you guys and listening to the show for quite some time, I mean 2 years, we have a special guest, former WrestleTalk alumni himself, Sati Yangi. So that should be fun. I've wanted to get him on the show for quite some time, since his days even in WrestleTalk, for quite some time. So this should be fun. But yeah, before we get to do that, let's get the housekeeping out of the way. So follow me on the site formerly known as Twitter, because I refuse to call that shit X. at Omar the Player Guy. Follow me on Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok. That's Best Things About Pro Wrestling this month. We post weekly short clips, interesting short clips. If you don't want to listen to the whole thing, you can just listen about the short clip. We also post some memes too, some very funny and insightful memes. So if you like memes and the short clips, just, you know, follow us on the social page. It's in the description. You know, Best Things About Pro Wrestling this month. Just Best Things About Wrestling. Best Things About Pro Wrestling this month. You just search it. It's going to be there. It is what it is. Just get it out of the way. So, yeah. Let's talk about January. This month made January 2023 look like, you know, a filler arc. Because an entire year's worth of... An entire year worth of content has fit into like one single month. There was a lot of things that happened. TNA Resurgence, Royal Rumble. Speaking of TNA, we had like Nick Nemeth, formerly known as Dolph Ziggler's debut in TNA. We also got Wrestle Kingdom stuff that we've seen, the great stuff we've seen in Wrestle Kingdom, which he also was there in New Japan. So that was crazy as well. Okada, you know, whether he's, I don't know where he's going. For all I know, he's going to All Japan. Who the hell knows at this point? You know, there's a lot of things happened in the month of January that's on the top of my head. I'm pretty sure there's a lot of things that I didn't even note down that happened the month of January 2024. And yeah, before we get to talk about the honorable mentions, I want to highlight a story, and a very important story, at least, you know, if an important story for the company, for the company, if they don't want to get, you know, praises or whatever. It's about accolades. Basic accolades is the word that I'm looking for, and that is WWE and the Emmys. Now you're probably thinking, what the fuck does that have to do with anything? What? The Emmys and WWE? Here's the thing. I'm going to highlight a story to you and a story that I'm going to tell you that should probably explain why WWE will never win an Emmy. And I say, and I'm not saying this, I'm saying this confidently, by the way. They will never win an Emmy. And here's why. So WWE recently hired a guy by the name of Lee Fitting, who he was the head of ESPN for over 25 years. That was following the departure of, you know, the resident shaky cam guy, a.k.a. Kevin Dunn. You know, he makes more shaky cams than a typical action movie directed by John Woo at this point. So they hired him. He was a ESPN talent and an ESPN guy that he's done a lot of production work for over a quarter of a century now, 25 years. And so you're probably thinking, okay, they hired a guy from ESPN. Okay, cool. What does that have to do with anything? So basically what happened was they were actually during last year's like Emmy consideration, for your consideration, what they did was when he worked for ESPN, they were actually putting in fake names and fake alumni. They were putting like fake names on it. And basically, the Academy of Motion Pictures and Science were like, hey, yo, what was that, man? Like, was that fake names? And then ESPN was like, oh, yeah, it was basically fake names. And because of that, him and WWE basically are not eligible to win an Emmy now, at least for the production side of things. So, yeah. They pretty much hired a guy who, while he is good at his job, is probably not going to get an accolade from WWE anytime soon. And now, looking back, now Kevin Dunn must be happy because the dude has always wanted to win an Emmy. So now WWE is not going to win an Emmy whether he's there or not there. So I'm sure Kevin Dunn is extremely happy about that. So, yeah, that was an interesting story, wasn't it? By the way, that was not the only scam. That was the only like expose that WWE has had this past week. The other expose that happened this past week is the Wall Street Journal lawsuit between one of the former employees and Vince McMahon. And here's the thing. Can I just say this out of the way? Fuck Vince McMahon. Fuck this piece of shit. They got rid of him. That was the best thing that ever happened. They should have locked this dude up. The next thing they should do is lock this motherfucker up. This old man up, okay? And never to be seen in society ever again, okay? Fuck this guy. He's a fucking piece of shit. He doesn't deserve anything. He doesn't deserve shit, by the way. And it's so funny, right? I've seen a lot of people talk about, you know,
Vince McMahon's a piece of shit, but you know, we gotta give him some credit. You know, he's the reason why we've been a fan of the company for so long. Hey, let me tell you something. The reason why a billionaire is a billionaire is because he exploited of his own workers. That's literally the reason. The reason why WWE is WWE is because of the wrestlers. It's because of the talent. It is because of the camera crew. It is because of the commentators. It is because of all the talent and the people who make WWE possible. Vince McMahon was just there to put money on it. And honestly, when Vince McMahon was on television, at best you want to see this guy get his ass kicked. You know what I mean? So the fact that I've seen some people, oh, you know, Vince McMahon, you know, the reason why is because, you know, you've been a fan because of it. Nah, fuck that shit. It's because of the wrestlers. People want to see John Cena. People wanted to see, back in the 90s, Hulk Hogan, or early 90s, late 90s, Steve Austin. People want to see people like that. Not fucking Vince McMahon. Like, get the fuck out of here, bro. Like, fuck off. Anyways, I don't know why I got pissed off, but you get my point, right? The reason why WWE is successful is because of the talent. That is it. Whether it's a wrestler, whether it's a referee, whether it's the talent and all of that. So, yeah, don't put the credit on the talent, not Vince McMahon. I want to talk about one honorable mention, and that is the promotion formerly known as Impact Wrestling, but now they brought back the name, and that name is TNA. Here's the thing about this promo. I am praying for their, you know, people say pray for their downfall. I'm praying for their upfall, because I want to see them succeed, man. You know, I'm actually dreaming that one day they might go back to, you remember Spike? Now it's like Paramount Network. I want to see them go back to those days. Days where like they had the Paramount Network and stuff. I want them to go to Paramount Plus and get those big deals. I don't think it's going to happen, but I'm hopefully that happens, because I think TNA is a very cool promotion. I think right now they got the best talent. Right now we've just seen the collaboration with WWE. We've seen that before with Mickie James, but then I read somewhere that she wasn't signed with the formerly known as Impact Wrestling, TNA. She didn't sign with TNA back then. It was like a by word kind of basis. Correct me if I'm wrong. That's what I read. So the fact that we this is the first time we're seeing a contracted TNA talent in Jordynne Grace in the Women's Royal Rumble, which we'll be talking about a little bit, because spoilers, it is probably one of the best Women's Royal Rumble match I've seen since the first one back in 2018. No match has come close to this one. This one's probably the best one. The Men's Royal Rumble, however, was but at least the right man won. But yeah, I think TNA is gonna do some great things, and hopefully you know, they get big contract, hopefully they get a momentum, because you know, for a while they were basically a cockroach that couldn't just die. Many years people thought, yo, this promotion is gonna collapse. You remember many years ago, back in like the mid to late 2010s, people were like, oh, when is TNA gonna collapse? When is TNA gonna collapse? Oh my god, like, are they gonna collapse? They're like that fallout, you know, cockroach in that they never die. And I'm, you know, looking back, I'm glad they never did. You know, just all I can say is that just keep, you know, just I hope they keep that momentum going. I think them bringing back the TNA name is very good from a marketing perspective. I know it brings back some terrible memories, because TNA storylines was basically WWE light. But I'm hoping they go back to like the pre 2010. I would say that's when they started becoming WWE light, or maybe 2009, I don't know. I hope to go back to like the mid-2000s era of TNA, where they were having some kick-ass matches, kick-ass storylines, just, you know, big meaty men slapping meat kind of action, but also little man slapping little meat kind of action, you know what I mean? But yeah, I just want to see them succeed, you know. It's just, it's one of those things where It's a good time. You know, we need a third promotion. We need a third, quote-unquote, major promotion. And I think TNA is it. TNA is it. WWE is great. AEW is great. But, you know, TNA can be great, too. And it has been great so far. You know, Nick Nemeth's debut was fucking awesome. You know, I mean, Trinity, a.k.a. Naomi, she's back in WWE at this point. But, yeah, Jordynne Grace being in the Women's Royal Rumble, that was pretty cool. You know, so yeah, it's just TNA is gonna do a lot of good things. You know, my honorable mention is
that resurgence is something that I'm keeping an eye for. And you know TNA is good when when Jason Solomon of the Solo Monster is actually reviewing a TNA show, which is crazy. Because if you've been listening to that dude for years, you would know he would basically say LOL TNA. And he used criticize TNA all the he would criticize more than WWE. And by the mid 2010s, WWE was doing some of the worst television ever. But the fact that he was criticizing TNA more is insane. But and the fact that he's now praising the aspects of TNA is kind of wild too. We kind of live in, to quote Jerry the King Lawler, bizarro world, right? Bizarre world. So it's crazy, you know. TNA is doing its thing, and it's doing the best, no pun intended, the best thing about, they were the best thing about pro wrestling in the month of January, if for some people, because that's how good they've been. And hopefully they keep their momentum going. That is something I want to see them prosper, something that I want to see them go, something that I want to see, something that I've been interested in. And it's also funny because a fan of mine, shout out to Hassan if you're listening to this, he told me that he is very interested in TNA, and he's actually going to watch it because he was not the biggest fan of that promotion. So now he's going to watch on a weekly basis, and that is because they brought back the name, and it's because they want to bring that marketing, that buzz back. And I think Scott D'Amore did a fantastic job doing that. So good on him, good on him, good on the crew. I want to see them prosper. I want to see, I'm praying for TNA's upfall, which, by the way, could be their next pay-per-view. Which, speaking of pay-per-views, that is, TNA has probably the best pay-per-view names of all time. Bound for Glory, Hard to Kill, you know, Slammiversary. You know, they have, I mean, AEW should be taking notes on how to write good PLE or pay-per-view names, whatever you want to call it. So, yeah, without further ado, here it is, my next guest of 2024, and the first guest of 2024, that is Sat Iyengi, former Wrestle Talk, I was gonna say What Culture, but you know, same fucking shit, you know, Oi Bruv Cinematic Universe. Here it is, me and him talking about the best things about pro wrestling in the month of January, and also the worst, because fuck Vince McMahon. Lock this nigga up.
Guest at this time is somebody who's been part of the Oi Bruv Cinematic Universe for the past few years now, somebody that I've wanted to get on this show for quite some time, somebody who used to work for Wrestle Talk, but not so much anymore. Something that I'm going to ask him in a little bit. It's my man, Sat Iyengi. How's it going?
Yeah, I'm good, man. What's going on? Sat E Day. I don't care if it's a Sunday. Sat E Day whenever I come around to Sat E Day.
Right. Oh, I like the way you did it. You like Sunday, Sat E. I got. And if this was Saturday, it would have fit it much better if we recorded on Saturday. That would have been a nice pun, you know?
You know what? I'm just letting people, it's a nice way to educate people, to let them know that Sat E Day is whatever day I'm on, to be honest. It's whatever day I'm on.
Yeah.
How you doing, Omar? What's good with you, man?
I'm doing great, you know, like as a football fan, you know, Arsenal just won as we're recording this. I know we're posting this on Wednesday, but as of on Sunday, yeah, we won, so that's pretty cool. But, you know, we ain't going to talk about football around here. We're going to talk about some wrestling, brother. So before we talk about some wrestling, we got to talk about wrestling talk or wrestle talk. I know you've been, you've recently left Wrestle Talk. So talk to me about the experiences and what is that important lesson that you learned from working there? Because I know that, you know, I've done a little bit of digging. I know that Will Ospreay recommended to you when you went to Wrestle Talk. So what is it like just working there? And just give me the most important lessons you learned from working in a high production stage like Wrestle Talk, because you know it can be, you know, it can, you know, you're learning with a group of people, you got, you know, production side of things. So just talk to me about that experience and that important lesson.
Well, for me, in order to talk about my experience, I have to go way back when I started in, I want to say 2021. I think it was when I did Wrestling Daily with Alex McCarthy. You know, I did a Tuesday show. And I also got to work with SB3. We got to do Monday. It was known as Mocha Mondays. So I'll say that I cut my teeth there in terms of me being doing podcasting. I learned a lot working with Alex McCarthy, especially when we were doing interviews together. His preparation, his dedication, that's why I emulated him and SB3. They brought the best out of me in terms of how I come across. But in terms of working with WrestleTalk, in terms of high production, I learned a lot from there as well. You know, they run a tight ship, especially when we did the whole hot tag storyline last year. They're giving people WrestleMania by hot tagging them. Rosie Nichols, who is like their stage designer, and also she was the director of the segments. She was a great director. You know, I was given a call sheet, what time to be there, where to be in terms of blocking and shots. It was great. And then in terms of like the production side, I didn't really do much. There were times when I was by myself, I'd ask for advice in terms of setting things up. But I was just mostly talent, to be honest. I wasn't really mm-hmm. very hands-on. I was just there. I was like, they made sure the levels were right. They made sure the cameras were switched on. They told me to move a little bit to the left to align a bit with the background. You know, it's more or less, I went there as talent, and I was happy just to come in there, do my business and leave.
You know what's so fun, what's so interesting? Because I was listening to, I don't know if you've heard of G4 and, you know, that campaign when Xavier Woods wanted to be So they shut down recently, and I was listening to Form of the Talent, and there's a guy by the name of the Black Hokage who's like a huge gaming space in the African, in the Black American sphere. And one of the things he told me was that when he was a talent, because he was on air talent, something that he told, you know, his fan base, I was listening to him on Twitch, was that he contributed a lot to the script. Even though he was only hired as a talent, he also contributed a lot to the script just to have some style on it. So I'm very curious, like, when they put a script on you, for example, let's say the Wrestle Talk News, do they have like a certain twang, certain style? It's like, you know what, I think Sat can only pronounce that, or that can like make that work, or is it like, hey, this is what we wrote, just make it work, you feel me, on the teleprompter?
Oh, so basically, giving you the backstory. So I had to audition to do the news. So when I auditioned to do the news, I had to write the news items of, they gave me headlines, the topic and headlines, and I had to write X amount of words for it. So did that, you know, in addition to my day job. I was doing it at my day job, and then I sent it off to Pete Quinnell, who was in charge of the auditions. So I wrote that, did it, passed, you know, my probation audition, you know, stage. But I told him I just didn't want to write, because for me, it took a lot out of my day to do that, because I got a full-time job. For me, it's like, you can't have a cake and eat it.
Okay.
You can't have a cake and eat it. So that's why I found out from SB3 that SB3 was writing news items for other guys at WrestleTalk. So I was like, oh, snap. I was like, I can have someone write for me. So I more or less said, can I have someone write for me? And it's more or less like WWE writers writing for a character. Like when I wrote my own thing, I wrote in my own voice. Obviously, you know, it makes sense. When you write for yourself, you know yourself. So someone wrote stuff for me. Additionally, the beginning was Pete. Pete kind of, you know, understood my voice. And then they gave me a new guy named Jamie. It was learning to understand. Certain things that he put in, I would change. So to answer your question, I mostly read what was on the page, but if there's certain things I knew that I wouldn't say, I would change it, or certain opinions. That's the thing as well. When certain opinions was put there and I didn't agree with it, I would sometimes omit it or change it. So most of the time I did 90% of what was written on there. But if I see an opportunity to ad lib or add my own little voice to it, I would. But it's all about time. For me, I didn't have time to write it. So I was like, I was grateful if someone wrote it for me. So I wasn't gonna be a penis about it. I wasn't gonna be a prima donna. But I wouldn't do it this way. I'm like, listen, I'm lucky that I have someone write for me. But I would, at times, if I didn't feel like it fit what I wanted to say, I would change it, or just, you know, ad-lib. That's why I'm mostly known for ad-libbing my stuff.
So final question before we get into the things we liked about in the months of January 2024. Yeah. I want to ask, like, what is next for Saiti Yangi? Like, do you got a YouTube channel coming? What's next for my G, you know?
It's a funny question you asked that. What's next for me? To be honest, I don't know what's next, you know? So, because even this is like the third time it's happened to me, because the first time I joined the WrestleTalk team, I was part of Wrestling Daily, and I got scrapped in December. Then I was brought back to do NXT 2.0. They ended up getting scrapped, you know, a few months down the line, and, you know, they brought me up for SmackDown. And I think, you know, SmackDown, you know, is the number two flagship show for WWE. And it's the only time I'm free. That's what, if people are wondering why I don't do a lot of stuff with them besides Saturday, it's because I'm busy, man. And you know, it's when I can fit time in my schedule, I can do stuff. If they really needed me to do something, you know, book a time off work, or, you know, if they push time back on a week day, I can do something. But All it means is just I'm more reoccurring in terms of my appearances than I was before. Before, you know, he saw me every Saturday. Now it's like here or there. But I just accepted an opportunity to do my community radio, because I do my community radio show every Monday. But by March, it's moving to Wednesday. And Wednesday was ideally the time I was kind of free to do some stuff, rest talk sometimes. But the fact that I've accepted this new gig, it means that I'm more or less, I don't know when you're next to see me, to be honest. Maybe the live shows I'm doing, because I won the Royal Jamble, Wrestle Talk Royal Jamble, because Cody Rhodes was one of the numbers that was picked. Cody was one of them. In fact, three of the final four was my numbers. I was going to win either way. So yeah, but I don't know what's next, to be honest. You know, I would like to work with Alex McCarthy again. Like, you know, if anything came up, that'd be great. You know, SB3 again. I'm on the SB3 YouTube channel. So True Huey Heat, we have a monthly show that me, Alex McCarthy, and SB3 do together, because I made it a thing that let's continue working together when we can. And SB3's got a YouTube channel, True Huey Heat, a platform there with many great guys podcasting there. So you will still see me. If you want to still see me, you'll see me in True Huey Heat. I do monthly over there.
Yep. Speaking of SP3, shout out to him. He's been hiring a lot of folks on Body Slam because he handles the social media aspect of them.
Yeah.
And as somebody who's a contributor to them, at least on the website side of things, yeah, that's cool. You know, I told him personally, you know, he's basically my favorite Arsenal manager. He's like that guy. You know, he's signing big talent right now.
Yeah.
Especially on SmackDown with Queenie Laring and Stephanie Hyde. So that should be cool. But yeah. Let's talk about the things we liked about January, shall we? So, obviously, you've paid attention to what's going on. But before we talk about January, obviously, the news that happened, the news between, you know, Vince McMahon and basically the lawsuit that's going on. I know, you know, we're hitting right to the negative zone, but we have to talk about it. Like, I know this is the best things about pro wrestling, but sometimes we got to talk about the worst as well, because that affects the industry as well. So, and by the way, shout out to Cameron Hawkins for asking the very good question at the Royal Rumble press conference alongside John Alba. So John Alba and Brendan Thurston, shout out to them. But yeah, I want to ask you, like, when you read the lawsuit, everybody was shocked. Even the town was shocked. You know, Cody Rhodes gave a very good speech. Triple H, not so much. Shawn Michaels was basically was like, you know, I want to keep it positive, but I understand that the media should, and they should be asking those questions. So he gave a better answer than his OG best friend. So just, I want to know your thoughts. I know you answered that question, but I just want to know your thoughts, like, and how, why is this keep happening in every single industry? It just bothers me so much, you know?
I feel like the more you have power and money, the more you get desensitized and the more you get away from being an actual human being. I think Vince McMahon has spent like the past 30 plus years not living like a normal, regular human being. He became out of touch. When you're out of touch reality and you have everybody blowing smoke up your buttocks, that's what tends to happen, man. You start buying into your own hype, and he bought into his own hype. He was bought into the hype, like, you know, money buys everything. Money and power controls everything. Did you read the court document, all 60 something pages? Did you read it?
I read some of it. I couldn't read the rest of it. I'm not gonna lie, it was way too distracting.
I read everything. I read the entire thing, and it was horrible. It's almost like reading a horror novel, and each page gets worse than the last.
Worst, you're like, worst.
You're like, it can't get as bad as what you're reading, and it proceeds to supersede it in the next page and the next page. And reading it, and people say it was shocking. The character of Mr. McMahon, even though for the longest time Vince McMahon said, you know, the Mr. McMahon character is an exaggerated version of him, you find out it's not. I mean, when you're growing up and watching WWE and you see Vince McMahon, how he functions, how he talks, how he acts, he doesn't act like a regular human being. He's very quirky, very weird. So for me to find out that that's what he did, I'm not very shocked. I mean, the way he pronounces things and the intensity. So there's so many things I felt like was telltale signs that this guy wasn't all there. So for me to read that, I was like, I'm not shocked. I'm not shocked that he defecated on this woman. I'm not shocked that he controlled her. It reminded me of the Trish Stratus storyline in 2001 when he was having an affair with her and Linda was catatonic, and how he, you know, He showered Trish with presents and jackets and mink coats and jewelry. He favored her over his daughter, but eventually became very manipulative, very abusive. He passed her to William Regal to pretend to be her boyfriend. So I thought I saw a lot of like parallels to that storyline and to some of the stuff I read on there. Of course, what I read in there was the extreme version, but like the barking like the dog, being mopped with, you know, junk, you know, like Trish was. She was humiliated on TV, told to strip. So it was in Vince McMahon. You see it. The fact that he wanted to be the storyline father of his daughter's child, that's not a normal human being. You know, they don't think like that. So for me, I felt like when I read it was shocking, it was appalling, but also seemed to not that shocking.
Yeah, it was not shocking. I 100% agree. And you actually brought up an interesting point about the Vince McMahon storylines, about how those storylines are, you could like exaggerate versions of things that he, you know, of not only himself, but the things that he wanted to do. And the fact that he was just a weird guy, but people didn't know how messed up the dude was until the lawsuit happened. And it was just one of those things where like, and I've said this earlier on the show, that you don't have to get rid of, not only you have to get rid of Vince McMahon, you have to get rid of the Vince McMahon-isms in the company too. You got to do a clean house. And that is something I've felt that. And something because, I don't know if you just read recently, just now, like one of the attorneys said similar to what everybody thought about after reading it, was like, the buck doesn't stop at Vince. You know, the buck stops at everyone who's complacent towards it. And you have to just get rid of, basically clean house. Basically, you got to clean everybody who's involved, everyone who's complacent about it. And it really sucks. And these are the things that, hopefully, God willing, hopefully, when the clean house does happen, if, you know, like just the company or like the working environment gets better and better, because this is just, this ain't it, you know?
Yeah, it's not it. And, you know, shout out to everyone that's affected by it. And I hope it becomes a better culture. But like you said, it's in every industry. When you get powerful people, they think they can get away with a depraved mentality. I do believe I am with you on that. They should clean house. Whoever's complicit to what happened, they should be removed from their spot, from their power. There's a lot of people that you know that still have Vince in their ear. They need to be removed as well. So I hope that this is a reckoning for the hierarchy and the structure of the way the toxic culture that WWE used to foster. I hope this is the end of that era, and then I hope we're onto a better one. But you know, I don't know, so I'm just gonna hold my breath when it comes to WWE, to be honest.
Yep, exactly what you said. So I don't know how to transition this, because this is a very depressing story, but I want to talk about the things that I liked about January. And so you watched the Royal Rumble, you've seen what happened in the month of January. What is that one positive thing you've seen in the month of January in professional wrestling in January? Do you like it, dislike it? Characters, segments, what do you think?
The Bayley storyline. I've been heavily invested in the Damage Control Bayley storyline, because we knew that the group has moved on from her. We just wanted to know how they're going to execute the turn, or was Bayley, you know, would Bayley be wise enough to know that it was coming? Unfortunately, the SmackDown segment, I got overlooked with the negative news or negative, you know, reaction to the other segment. It kind of overshadowed a brilliant segment. So I was happy that Bayley won the Royal Rumble. I feel like the Women's Royal Rumble was the better Rumble of the two. It had more of the surprises. I think it had more variety. I think the thing that was missing with the Men's Rumble, I felt like it was just one note throughout. You know, yeah, you know, Andrade came back and that. But just besides Andrade coming back, there wasn't that spot where I call it the diesel spot, where one guy dominated the Rumble halfway through. You know, kind of like the way Brock Lesnar did, you know, Diesel did it, Kane did it. You know, that spot where one guy's just eliminated guys one by one, and then there's a group of people. Like, I felt like there wasn't segments to break it up. It was just too monotonous. And at one point, it felt like watching a Raw Battle Royal. But in terms of, again, going back to Women's Rumble, Jade Cargill, you know, debuted at the Rumble. Naomi made her return. And there's so many great things that happened there. So, yeah, I'm going to say Women's Rumble. And I'm going to mute this because I need to sneeze. And Bayley getting her flowers, you know, because I feel like the past year, 2023, for me, wasn't a great year for Bayley. She's taking a lot of losses. It came to the point where she had a TV match with Bianca Belair and ended. I felt like it was under 10 minutes, the match. She lost to Charlotte really quickly. So it came to a point where it felt like Bayley wasn't the same like she used to be. So I'm hoping this is a redemption for her reputation and her place in the wrestling business, because this is the woman that carried the pandemic. This is the woman's one half of the greatest women's wrestling match in North America. So I'm hoping Bayley, the legend, gets her flowers. Ever go to WrestleMania, have her first one-on-one match against Io Sky and win.
You know what's so funny about you saying that? I actually developed a question. Don't you think like that segment was great and all, but don't you think like she turned quote unquote babyface a lot sooner? Or do you think you wanted to wait for at least a few weeks, or maybe like around the Elimination Chamber kind of period, or maybe after? Like, what do you think? Do you think that quote unquote babyface turn was a lot sooner?
For me, the babyface turn started at Survivor Series.
If
you know what I mean, that's when they start booking her differently. She went from being the inept heel. That's where we last left her, because before Kairi Sane returned, right? So let's go back to the Saudi show,
Crown Jewel.
So Bayley was she became the inept leader. You know, she wasn't really winning. She, you know, I'm the leader, and you know, we were more or less on Io Sky's side, because it wasn't that long ago, Money in the Bank, you know, Bayley had the handcuffs and she tried to handcuff Io. So you know what I'm saying? Like, she was a heel up to a bit. And for me, the switch happened when Kairi joined Damage Control without Bayley knowing. Is when they started doing a coup to oust her. That's when they start shifting her, because she became a bit desperate, because she kind of sensed something was going on. The fact that no one's letting me know, like, you know, that Kairi's in the group and Asuka's now in the group. She basically started overcompensating by trying to be too nice. You know, trying to be like, oh, I did this for you. You know, like, she became desperate. And then the Survivor Series, she was the first one woman, you know, she was the Iron Woman of that group. And she saved a lot of her colleagues, her teammates from getting pinned. She, you know, she put on a great, brave performance. And for me, that brave performance was the catalyst of the start of the slow burn face turn. So for me, it wasn't out of nowhere. I felt like her demeanor has been changing since Survivor Series. She's become much nicer to her group. She wasn't exerting that I'm the boss. It's kind of like I'm the boss with a question mark at the end, because she wasn't sure. You know what I'm saying? So they did a good job of making us sympathetic towards her. Poor Bayley, but you probably might, you know, tell the rest of the people that's not what happened. So I felt like, yeah, it wasn't rushed. You had to get straight to it. WrestleMania is happening. You start building it up. I felt like how they did it really well.
Yeah, exactly. You know what's so funny? You mentioned earlier about how Bayley's, at this point, she's becoming, you said it earlier, she's now the legend, because a lot of the women talent, and especially in NXT, they've been inspired to wrestle because of that Bayley and Sasha Banks match, Mercedes Money. You know, that match, I mean, at NXT TakeOver many years ago, that has become, you know, when wrestlers back in the day with you, so I got inspired by watching Ricky Steamboat and Randy Savage at WrestleMania 3 for the IC title. That is now the women's version of it. So I do think that's going to be coming. You're going to hear that match a lot, and rightfully so, because that was probably one of the greatest matches, in my opinion, of all time. That was one of the best matches of all time. So, yeah, you talked about the Women's Royal Rumble. That's the thing I'm going to talk about, the thing that I liked about in the month of January, which is the Women's Royal Rumble. I'm going to say something right now. This is probably the best Women's Royal Rumble so far. They've been doing this since 2018. I thought that match was pretty cool. But ever since, they've been either pretty decent, they've been all decent, except the Charlotte Flair win at 2020. That was that was not it. But other than that, they've been all decent. Even though we didn't like the certain wins, at least those matches weren't that, they weren't terrible. So we haven't had the 1995 Royal Rumble, you know what I mean? We didn't have the 2015 Royal Rumble or the 2014 Royal Rumble when it comes to women's Royal Rumble so far, at least, God, I hope. I mean, with the new regime, you know, I don't think that's going to happen, but we'll see. So I want to ask you regarding you've said the Women's Royal Rumble, how great it was. I mean, you got the moments, you got the Jade Cargill. You know, I'm actually surprised they haven't mentioned her. The commentary assumed that she was just like this big signing, but like they haven't mentioned her accolades in aid, or like at least not hinting like, oh, she used to be undefeated and so-and-so, or you know, that aspect. Like, you treat like she was a star, but not why she was a star in the first place. Maybe like they haven't mentioned that aspect. I don't know, maybe out of bitterness, I don't know, but we'll see what happens. But the thing that I liked about this match was, you know, the Jade Cargill and Bianca Belair. To the point where I'm like, hey guys, WrestleMania match, Bianca has nothing to do at WrestleMania. I mean, Charlotte Flair is injured. Now we got Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill. I think that could be great. I know most people want to see Jade Cargill at NXT. That is a decent point, but I mean, WWE doesn't really care about the brand split like that anyway. So just do an interpromotional match like they have done in the past before. So, I mean, just talk to me further about how great this Royal Rumble match basically is. And why the men's Royal Rumble is, like you said, a Raw Royal Rumble match from like 2011 or something.
First of all, shout out to the appearance of Jordynne Grace in that Rumble. That was really good.
Oh, that was great. That was great. I was going to mention that. Oh, yeah.
Great surprise. And I felt like she was head and shoulders above most of the women in the Rumble in terms of how she was moving. She was moving quick. She had to slow herself down because they don't wrestle at her pace. The pace that she was wrestling when she first got in, it was too advanced for them. So, and she looked like she belonged. I'm just happy. Someone like Jordynne Grace, each time her contract like comes up with Impact, TNA, you know, she leaves for like a few months or wherever it is, and she ends up going back to TNA. And I'm like, wow, is there no value in her with AEW or even WWE? But the fact that Triple H is showing interest in her, that for me hints. And also, it felt like it was like a job interview, an audition, if you will, Jordynne Grace, and she passed with flying colors. She looked like she belonged. She stepped up to, like, you know, Bianca. She, you know, she flexed her muscles against Ivy Nile. You know, she did. She had an ample amount of time to make an impression for people that had never seen her wrestle, and then it just left, you know, everyone wanting more. And I want her to succeed because I feel like she's vastly underrated in the landscape of women's wrestling. Another thing of why the Rumble did really well is Nia Jax. So I've never, the only thing I've ever said was they rushed Nia Jax's progression and rushed her from NXT to the main roster.
True.
What happened was you were watching her develop her wrestling skills right before your very eyes, kind of similar to how Jade Cargill was doing in AEW. She was learning on the job. So certain mistakes that you would be like, oh, you shouldn't make. I'm like, you know, we're watching her develop before our very eyes. So she was known for, you know, being injury prone, Nia. She was known for being, you know, stiff. But I feel like since she's come back, she's lost, you know, a lot of weight. She's come back motivated and she's proving haters wrong. Because I never hated Nia. I'm a huge fan of Awesome Kong. I love Aja Kong. You know, I'm a fan of hot women. So I don't like women all looking the same size because it comes to the point where during the Ruthless Aggression era, someone like Victoria was considered more or less a quote-unquote hoss in a women's division because she was the nearest thing they had in terms of being big. She was like 145 pounds, 5'8". But you've got someone like Nia Jax who's close to 6 foot tall and, she's curvy. And, you know, she looks like built like a brick. You need someone like that can knock out a Rhea Ripley and make Rhea Ripley look like an underdog, you know, potentially, you know. So I feel like she had a standout performance there. Chelsea Green was incredible in there. She offered some levity, some comedic spots in there. So that's something, yeah. So many layers to that Rumble that you didn't see in the men's Rumble, except for R-Truth. R-Truth was the MVP in both male and female Rumble, you know. So I felt like the women stood out. And also someone pointed out on X, formerly known as Twitter, that this was the first women's Rumble that didn't rely solely on legends. So just mostly current main roster women and NXT. And another thing as well, you're saying that this was the best Rumble. It may be either number two or number one. The reason I say that is because I felt like the last year Rumble, the one real one, was a very good Rumble. And how her and Liv, that ending was very inventive. So it's either that one as number one or maybe this one. I liked the one Bianca Belair was in. I know that's the Thunderdome one, but I really enjoyed that one as well. I didn't like the Ronda one. I didn't like the Charlotte one. There was good flashes of brilliance in each of those Rumble, but in terms of thoroughly enjoying the Rumble begin to end, even this one, I think the reason why I'm putting this one not as number one because there was a middle point where it started to go a bit down, started to slow down a bit, and you know the fans were kind of like getting quiet. So that's why I'm booming the iron by giving it number one, because I feel like last year's one, the pacing was really good for it. And you know, that Rumble made Rhea Ripley who she is today. That and the WrestleMania victory against Charlotte, the dominant victory.
Yep. That's exactly how I feel about it, because, oh yeah, the Becky Lynch one was decent, but overall, like, the best one was, like, the first one and now the recent one. So that was just my opinion on that. And yeah, like, it's just the Royal, you know, it's just one of those things where, like, it's the most exciting time of the year, and it's the best thing about, you know, pro wrestling, the month of January 2024. And I mean, other than I've said and mentioned my intro, which is TNA. I think TNA has done a lot of strides as of late. You know, like, what are your thoughts on TNA bringing back the Impact, bringing back the TNA name, and basically waving that marketing towards basically being like that third promotion, the third, you know, entity within the professional wrestling sphere? Because in my opinion, I'm praying for TNA's upfall. So my question is, are you basically?
Oh yeah, I'm rooting for TNA. For the longest time, you know, the thing that makes me laugh is I finally learned to say Impact, because for ages when they changed from TNA to Impact, I was like, that's still TNA. And then for me, it didn't make sense that they named themselves after their TV show. I'm like, Impact Wrestling, which show called Impact? You know, I was that guy. But over the last year, they found their stride. They're like the least problematic wrestling promotion around. Scott DeMuro is underrated, because Scott DeMuro never gets in trouble. We never hear anything. Cause I can't say Scott DeMuro is the best, because who knows what skeletons that he's got locked in his closet, allegedly. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But at the moment, I can say with confidence that Scott DeMuro, alongside Shawn Michaels, they're the only two people that's running, you know, wrestling shows or you know, companies or leagues that's doing well. I think Scott DeMuro is underrated. He's, you know, partnered with a lot of different companies. He's got great wrestlers along them. Josh Alexander is more or less their de facto ace, but they have been missing more people in their main event scene, because I feel like they've got great X division, they've got great Knockouts division, they've got, you know, a good to decent tag division, but their main event scene has always been their biggest issue, because each time a wrestler gets popping, they'll get snatched up by WWE and AEW. It was mostly in AEW, because I'm just thinking about Brian Cage was their guy. Oh, I guess WWE as well, because they took Lashley, because Lashley was their guy, and they took EC3. Yeah. So yeah. So it's like, and Matt Hardy as well. So yeah, it's both companies. Yeah. So each time they build up someone, they get stolen. So that's always been kind of their issue. So you'd have thought that Josh Alexander, with that legendary title reign, he would have get snapped up. But he's saying at the moment, you know, that he's Mr. T, he's TNA through and through. Moose would never go to any other company because he has a problematic checkered past. Just in case a lot of people, they'll be like, oh, Moose, he's big and whatever. How come they never take him? Like, oh, just Google the guy. You'll understand why WWE won't really. He alleges that they offered him a contract. It's kind of like, I don't know. A part of me is like, would you really turn down an opportunity? Because I don't know, man. He seems like a lifer to me at the moment, Moose. But TNA has been doing all the good things. Their shows have been doing well. They've been very cohesive. They finally, it's taken them over a decade to get rid of the stink of the Hogan Bischoff administration, which is what, you know, ruined them in the first place. You know, losing AJ Styles, you know, all of that made them look bad. And losing, you know, all the original core wrestlers that made them who they are. But they've rebounded. And by going back to the TNA name, it takes back the nostalgia. I think it's them reclaiming their history. For the longest time, they went away from their history, trying to, we're different. We're not that era anymore. Because it was so bad. The brand was so damaged. They had to go under a different name. But now that, you know, people have nostalgia for TNA, it makes sense for them to reclaim the legacy. So to answer my long-winded answer, I'm rooting for them, because they've been there for a long time. They were my younger brother, who's a wrestling fan, his favorite wrestler is AJ Styles. And I was happy from when AJ went to WWE, because I was like, hey, your favorite wrestler is now your favorite wrestler here as well. He's his overall favorite wrestler. We grew, you know, he grew up watching it. You know, that was an alternative when WCW was gone, you know. And is it a number three? You could argue it's between TNA and, I guess, New Japan. If it's overall, New Japan is overall is number three. But in terms of North America, it's between TNA MOW could try and go for it. NWA can try to get their business together. I don't know. But you can say that they're the de facto number three.
Yeah, you could say that NWA has a lot of crack that they need to clean up, you know? But
I was into the, you know, the pandemic, pre-pandemic NWA.
Those were good. Yeah.
Yes. I was rooting for them. You know, I discovered, you know, Stroke Daddy, Ricky Starks on the NWA, you know, and then you're watching Eli Drake randomly team up with James Storm. And then you got, you know, Mr. Anderson, you know, and Eddie Kingston for me was my eyes opened to him even more during the NWA time, because he's someone that, you know, I've read about and seen clips of during his CZW days, a little bit of, ROH, you know, he's there with Homicide as a tag team, then they disappear, you know, Outlaw Inc. And then, you know, even I think what made me sit up and take notice is when he was King doing the turf war between the two LAX groups, the OGs and the new one, you know, when he was King, I was like, this guy is good, you know. I didn't really watch his stuff with when he was with James Storm and what's his face, Tom Latimer, Bram, because they were like the Deaf Council, some of the DCC Deaf Count Deaf. I forgot the name of the group. They were all masks and ties, and you know, remember that group. But yeah, that's when he was brought in. But I took notice of him doing his final running with TNA. And his NWA stuff. So when he went to AEW, I was like, yeah, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, it is a no-brainer. But you know, it's just the things that I think TNA, I mean, like I said, like NWA needs to get their crack to be cleaned. But, you know, it is what it is. But yeah, that's the thing. So yeah, is there any other thing that you liked about the month of January? Because I got a shout out to my man, Obafemi. Who's the new NXT North? I mean, not new, but like he's now the current NXT.
He's the new champion.
He's the new champion, but like at this point, it's been a while. But it's been. But what I'm trying to say is that he is getting massively over. I remember seeing him back all the way back in July. I'm forgetting what was that show with the NXT. It was Level Up. Yeah, I saw him like a few months ago. I was like, yo, this dude is it. And now the fact that there's crowd chants, you know, based on him, whenever he speaks, like the crowd reacts. I mean, by the way, like NXT has been a great show. Like they're not black and gold, but you know, that's it shouldn't be black and gold. They've become a different era of NXT, and now NXT has become a great show. Now they've become a mix of like that 2012 era of NXT, where like they were bringing out like the people who had no in-ring experience, but now they're molding them to some perfect instead of like mid to late 2010s where it's like, you know, I'm just signing indie guys, which is great, by the way. I don't mind that either. But now it's a different era of NXT. At first, I didn't see the vision. But now at this point, 2-3 years in, I saw the sign now, to quote Ace of Base. So, yeah. What are your thoughts about NXT in general? Like, do you like it? Do you dislike it? I know like you said earlier, you reviewed it. So, like, what are your thoughts on it?
I've got a soft spot for NXT 2.0, post 2.0, because they're not NXT 2.0 anymore. I call it NXT white and gold, because that's what it is.
Yeah.
There's a white and gold sign.
Gold, yeah.
But the crop of talents you see there, they evolved from NXT 2.0, innit? You can say that NXT 2.0 was either like the caterpillar / cocoon, and now we see the butterfly form of what the vision was. Because you could argue towards the end, the Karrion Kross era of NXT Black and Gold, you know, during the pandemic, it wasn't the same anymore. You know, it came to a point where a lot of wrestlers grew stale because they've been in development for too long. You know, Adam Cole needed to move on. Kyle O'Reilly needed to move on. Johnny Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa needed to move on because they've done everything they need to do. Imagine you're there, you've done everything you need to do, and you're just like, you know, fiddling, twirling your thumbs. You know, the Velveteen Dream debacle, Austin Fury being hidden, done developmental to make us forget that he's part of the group of, you know, Andrade and Angel Garza in the beginning. You know, there's so many things that happened during that time period. It was just like NXT Black and Gold was on a decline. As much as people want to say, oh, NXT Black and Gold, it wasn't any people complaining about the 30, 40 minutes Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly matches. It wasn't really hitting like that anymore, you know? And then Adam Cole, we hit, you know, Karrion Kross with that promo. Is there so many things about that last few months of NXT that I was ready for a change. When they were changing, I was like, yeah, it's a developmental at the end of the day. No matter how much Triple H wanted to believe that his vanity project was on the same level as Raw and SmackDown, when it wasn't. It wasn't. Your job is to develop new talent, which I always knew. It's great that, okay, it's in USA. By the end of the day, I've been following the WWE or / WWF developmental since the OVW days. I used to go on the OVW website, check out the roster page, look, oh, this guy could potentially come to WWE. I used to read the results. And then, you know, same with DSW, Deep South Wrestling. I'll go on their, you know, website, go on their roster page, start, you know, skimming through the names. I'm like, okay, this guy could come down. I remember when Cody Rhodes was Cody Runnels, 19-year-old Cody Runnels on OVW roster, on the roster page. And then YouTube came along and I was watching bits of OVW on YouTube and then FCW. I was watching a lot of FCW on YouTube. I did the same thing with FCW. Went on their roster page. Look who's there. See Jimmy and Jey Uso on there. You know, seeing like the Rotundo brothers there. You know, Duke and Bo Rotundo. Duke Rotundo ends up being Bray Wyatt. There's so many wrestlers I was looking. I was like, okay, they're going to come to the main roster soon. You know, I always like to be ahead of the curve. That was the way I was back in the days. But with NXT, they made it easier. You know, it was on the WWE Network. It was on the USA Network. So it became much more mainstream than any prior developmental. So I understand why Triple H had it in his head that it was almost on an equal footing. But I say that it was like WWE, ECW. You're just a third brand, a feeder system for the other two brands. But yeah, when 2.0 happened, Shawn Michaels was given the unenviable task of taking over from Triple H. And he got given a ball and he had to run with it. And he had to introduce like 20 plus new wrestlers over the next few weeks. Heck, on the first episode, here's Bron Breakker, here's Von Wagner. And they were like, what? But we all knew who Bron Breakker was because, you know, that was Rex Steiner, you know, the alleged, Bron Rex Steiner was going to be called Rex Steiner. But they changed it and they called him Bron Breakker. And they were like, why is he not a Steiner? So we knew who he was. And then as soon as we saw him wrestle, we saw the potential for him to be the guy in the future, which he still is. I still feel like he's the heir apparent for the next 20 years. That's your next guy. That's the evolution of Roman Reigns from Cena, Reigns, his Bron Breakker. So yeah, in the beginning, you had all these new characters, some of them green. You know, you had the Tony D'Angelo's come into the fold. You had the Grayson Waller, who started off as the baby face, and then him and LA Knight had a double turn. You know, LA Knight came towards the end of Black and Gold, where he became one of the eldest statesmen of 2.0. Cameron Grimes was doing great work. It's a shame that WWE hasn't capitalized on what Cameron Grimes was doing in developmental. Joe Gacy, the best version of Joe Gacy was when Joe Gacy had clothes on. No offense. Ever since they're wearing normal wrestling clothes, he's lost his way. Don't you agree?
I agree.
Think about this. He came with a group of guys that all have now, most of them, going to the main roster.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. You know,
You could argue, oh, you know, because he lost, Group Harlan. He lost Harlan and he lost, you know, Schism, you know, because he became like the poison chalice. Whoever you put Joe Gacy with, expect them to get released or something. I don't know. But Joe Gacy's someone that I think they need to focus more on who he is. I think they've lost who he is. They had it. He was like a disingenuous social injustice warrior. And then they went for the spooky route doing his feud with Bron Breakker, which I felt like made the character jump shark. And he became like a Bray Wyatt, like a Poundland version of Bray Wyatt, just talking mumbo jumbo and there's nothing of consequence with his promos. But to answer your question long-windedly as I've been doing, NXT 2.0 has a special place in my heart.
Yeah. Yeah, I was good.
Tiffany Stratton.
Oh, yeah, Tiffany Stratton.
You saw her. She wasn't, when she first started off, she was okay. She had her weave was falling out at certain points. You know what I'm saying? Extension of the queen in America. But look how far she's come. She's now fluid. I say it is that Ludwig Kaiser tutorial that's made her a great wrestler. But yeah, I just like seeing people grow and the growth, and now that, you know, they're on the main roster. Yeah.
You know, so funny about NXT, you remember that time where like NXT and AEW was like competing for one last time, like back in it was on October of last year, and literally the best women's match that they had in NXT was actually one of the women's breakout tournament. I remember that match was amazing. I was like, out of all the women's matches that happened between AEW and NXT at the same time, literally the breakout tournament had like the match of the night. So it goes to show you that Tiffany Stratton, who came from that system, can develop and can mature to a point where she had like banger back-to-back matches with Becky Lynch. So it is what it is. And yeah, speaking of Joy Gacy, I don't know why is he working on Fightful. Like, I've seen him 1 week, he's like reviewing on the Fightful post show, but then he's not on, but he's also on NXT. By the way, that was a joke. That was a Joel Pearl, you know, who works in Fightful. So I just call him like Joy Gacy all the time. That's a running joke that I've had for a while, but yeah.
Keep the gimmick, bro. Yeah. Keep the gimmick going, brother. I support it.
Yeah, exactly. Current Fightful champion, by the way, the last time I checked. By the way, shout out to Fightful. They've been doing great stuff. You know, I remember when Sean Rossap had like the soccer mom hairstyle. They had like barely 2,000 subs. Look at them, 100,000 subs. They became the most wrestling subscribed on Patreon. Shout out to my man, Corey Brennan. He's now contributing to the Fightful Select scooping side of things, the scoop side of things. I'm so glad that he's doing so well, because actually my former guest on this show itself. So he's been hardworking on Body Slam for many years. So now him going to, you know, the Fightfuls of the world, breaking those news. I think he's going to be that guy. I think, you know, when Dave Meltzer and Mike Johnson eventually, you know, moves away, I think it's going to be the Sean Rossaps and the Corey Brennans of the world. And Nick Houseman, depending on whether he loses into, whether he gets like ratioed on Twitter, then he might break a news or two. I don't know, because he's that guy.
But yeah, Sean Rossap, I'm not saying that WrestleTalk should take credit for it, but him doing the Quizmanias is what put him in the forefront for a lot of people. So, you know.
That is true, because I saw an interview you did with Jared Bailey. By the way, shout out to the homie Jared Bailey. He actually followed me on Twitter like back in 2021. He was like, yo, I really liked your articles that I used to write for my own blog like a few years ago. I was like, yo, keep doing what you're doing. And that was really cool. And he mentioned that like he discovered Sean Rossap, not from his days in Fightful or even his days in Wrestling Inc., by the way. It was because of Cruzomania. And I was like very surprised. A lot of people said the same thing. So that actually made sense. It was between your conversation with Jared Bailey. So shout out to him. But yeah. You were gonna say something.
Did you watch all my appearances?
Most people are. I mean, I'm a researcher as you know. I'm actually working on a research paper. So that is why I've been busy for so long on the site. That's why I do a monthly podcast and I contribute to Love Wrestling and Body Slam, because I do a lot of research, and this is one of them. But yeah, thank you, Sat, for being here on the show. We've been for 45 minutes, which is insane. I've never had a guest that went like over 45 minutes, unless that was last year. Yeah, it was last year's show with Colin Lawler of Heroes for Hire podcast. He actually talks about comic books, but he's a big wrestling fan. I had to get him in. My fellow Irish brother. I always say like I'm spiritually Irish, so it is what it is. Sat, where can the people find you? Because I know you're no longer part of WrestleTalk-ish. So just let me know where people can find.
Okay, that is a false information. I'm no longer part of WrestleTalk. Because when you're saying it, I'll always be part of the family. But, you know, like I said, I'm on a Roman Reigns schedule. You don't know when you're going to see me.
Oh, yeah. Okay, part-time schedule. Okay, got it.
I'm on a part-time schedule. Whenever I'm free, that's when you'll see me. When you catch me. I'm on X, formerly known as Twitter. My handle is @satnext2. You know, if you follow me, you'll see that I've been talking about my displeasure with the current booking plans for WrestleMania 40. That's what I've been doing. So please follow me there. I've got a link tree that's attached to it. So, you know, all my other stuff is on there if you want to check me out. But the best place to catch me is @SatNextTo on Twitter. If you tweet me, I do tend to respond. I ask Omar, I do respond to people, you know, if it's a genuine question. Yeah. If you want to have a genuine conversation, I'm there. But if you're being facetious, if you're being patronizing, then if you don't get a response from me, that means you're being patronizing or facetious, or you're trying to get me mad.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, the reason why I want to bring you in, because you kind of remind me of my man, Muscle Man Malcolm. He's the guy that I want to get into the show soon. And you just have this positive vibe, the positive energy that you bring into the world. And I got to say, like, keep doing what you're doing, because I think people are going to notice. And I think you've brought in a lot of fans of WrestleTalk, and, you know, so it is what it is. I think you're going to do a lot bigger, God willing. So keep doing what you're doing. And, but yeah, I'm going to do my housekeeping out of the way. Follow me on the site formerly known as Twitter at Omar the Player Guy, because I refuse to call that shit X. Follow me on the TikToks and the YouTubes at Best Things About Pro Wrestling this month. I post a clip every single week on Saturday. I don't know what time, but you know it's on Saturdays. By the way, thank you guys so much. We've reached 200 subscribers and over 150 followers on TikTok. We've reached 100,000 views on YouTube. So thank you guys so much for that. And over 200,000 views on TikTok. So thank you guys so much for that. They really prove that conversations like this really proves that people get, we're having genuine conversations and people are a lot interested in. So thank you guys so much for that. And yeah, other than that, I don't know how to end this other than we the F out.
We're out of time.
Yeah. Bye.